So you're very welcome. So this morning I'm joined in studio by two interviews. And the first one is going to be Lucy Cunningham. Lucy is a very hard-working lady and she's career-driven, but she's also extremely kind, caring and supportive towards OAPs. She gets a satisfaction out of connecting people and she has a little bit of information behind the scenes from OAP B&B last night. If anybody is unsure what that is, it was a program on Virgin Media the last couple of weeks and it was connecting people together, young and old. And I suppose it was filling in the gap of loneliness. Lucy is here to talk to us all about that and all about what she does. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning, Shane. Thank you for having me.
It's so lovely to have you. And thank you for coming in to see us.
My pleasure.
Good, good, good. So, Lucy, we've got lots to talk about. I came across you a couple of weeks ago and I thought this girl has so much information that she can share. Tell us your story.
How long do we have? Not long enough. So I suppose it doesn't define me, but I just turned 44 last week and I've got three children, three teenagers, God help me. And I'm divorced, divorced 12 years now. Separated 12 years. So I'm very much a single mum. It's just me and my guys, and their dad, unfortunately, isn't on the scene. So that they drive me, you know, my children drive me, they have done, you know, since they were born. What else can I say about me? I'm in an amazing place in my life now.
Okay.
Never been in a better place ever.
Okay. And what does that feel like?
It feels so empowering. It feels happy.
Okay. Was it always like that?
No.
Okay, why not?
I suppose my life has had its ups and downs.
Okay.
So I suppose a sad picture. I suppose my life started off when I was 5 months old when my mother died by suicide.
Okay.
And I grew up, my dad married again when I was about 8. I was the youngest of 5 children. And I think because my poor dad actually buried 2 wives and his last marriage ended up after 25 years in separation.
Okay.
So I suppose family life growing up was very up and down. And I think because I look at my family and I'm going to be seeing them all tomorrow. Actually, we have a naming ceremony for my niece's new baby. So can't wait for that. I'm not sure how they'll react to this, but I suppose because of our upbringing, I think it made us all very emotionally independent.
Okay, so every positive has a negative and every negative has a positive.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I suppose, you know, certainly for me, you know, I grew up looking out for myself because people would come and go, you know, in our lives. So I then, went on and had an amazing, studied nursing. I went over to England and studied nursing. And then I started working with British Airways as cabin crew. So that was a 6-year party. Amazing. The best fun, you know, 6 years of my life. And then I thought, you know what, I want to settle down and fell in love. And that was all good for a very short time, unfortunately. It turned out that my ex-husband was an alcoholic.
Okay.
Very abusive marriage. So after, you know, protection orders and this, that and the other, you know, we finally, after when my baby, my youngest was 5 months old, we finally separated. So it was weird. It was kind of like history repeating itself, you know.
Okay.
But life was a struggle during the marriage. But then after that, it was probably even more of a struggle. You know, I was at home with 3 children under 3, well, under 4.
But surely it was easier when he was gone.
In some ways it was, because the house was calm.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't walking on eggshells.
Okay.
But in other ways, you know, when he would see the children and, you know, have access, he was very, very manipulative. So he would plant seeds in their head.
Okay.
You know, saying, oh, mummy's bad and this, that and the other. And he actually turned a lot of people against me. And he was, so I ended up actually going through a bout of depression a few times in my life. And I suppose, now I have gone public about this before, but I suppose never on the airwaves. But I'm very, very passionate, not just about older people, but about mental health as well. So I actually had 2 suicide attempts myself.
Okay.
So that, and I'm delighted to say I have never been better, you know, for the last few years, never been better. So that, so I had two really dark times, you know, in my life.
But you're over all that now.
I am over all of that. And life has never been better.
Okay. To anybody listening that can kind of relate to what you're saying, or they might say, you know, I can kind of think of that situation, or I remember being there. I'm still stuck there, or I feel like I'm going there. What would you say to them?
I'd say they need to talk to someone. They need to reach out. That no matter... I had so many times where I literally pulled the duvet over my head, couldn't, people would, you know, friends would try and contact me and they'd know if I went quiet, well, you know, Lucy isn't in a good place. I would just say to them, reach out. I would also say to friends of people, there might be some listeners thinking, do you know what, I know someone going through this. Keep going, keep knocking on their door, you know.
And don't give up.
Don't give up. Don't give up. I've had so many people I know who have died by suicide. I mean, 4 girls I went to school with, my best friend's husband, we buried him on Christmas Eve 2 years ago. My granddad 2 years ago, age 97. So there's been a lot of suicide, you know, in my life.
Okay.
So it is one thing I'm very passionate about. We just need to talk. And it's one thing that actually really, really gets to me, that there are people, everybody, it's the same rhetoric. We need to talk. It's okay not to be okay. You know, speak out, this, that and the other. Everyone says that, but I know for a fact that people say that, but as long as you don't talk about your own personal mental health.
I know people feel embarrassed about this situation.
Because
I remember a long time ago going to my mom, you know, and I was fighting with like demons inside of my own head, and I knew what it was, but I was using depression as kind of like a pillar. I went to mom, I feel so sad and I'm just depressed and all that. Go away, go away out of that, will you, for God's sake, you're not, I know, and but that was really back then, and like I wasn't depressed, but now I would think twice about saying it to like somebody if I was having a bad day. So I think you need to just pluck up the courage, make the call, extend your arm to somebody and say, look, I'm really not feeling the best, and just do it. And then you get the results. Am I right?
I think so. I think so. And I do think it's better to speak with friends. You know, in the past, you know, I would have, you know, made a couple of phone calls to, you know, famous charities, organisations, you know, who deal with suicide and mental health. And they offer an amazing service, but it's not for everyone. You know, it's you know, people think, well, I'm not going to talk to a stranger. I mean, I remember one day actually ringing Samaritans and it actually made me feel worse about myself. I thought, has my life gotten that bad?
Was it a reality?
Sorry, how do you mean?
So like you're speaking with somebody on the phone, and they kind of say X, Y and Z to you, and then all of a sudden it really hits home even more, and then you feel worse.
No, to me it actually, it was like as if it suddenly hit me, like, oh my God, Lucy, are you really that bad that you actually, you're having a moan at a stranger? You know,
so you're questioning yourself.
I was questioning myself. It's like, why are you ringing? You know, you need to speak to somebody who, you know, to people who know you, who love you.
That understand you.
That understand you, and that, you know, they'll be there to meet you for a coffee tomorrow and they'll be there next week. Now, I'm absolutely not disregarding or dismissing these amazing organisations. They're absolutely amazing and I wish...
But you're entitled to say what you have to say and what you've experienced.
But I think the bottom line really for me is that, you know, if you're in a bad place, you know, you'll go to the doctor if you have a migraine, or, you know, you'll go to A&E if you've broken your arm or your leg. Mental health is far more serious than that. Just because you can't see it, it's far more serious.
Understand. Okay, so tell us, because you've got like an amazing story that we're getting to. What has been your turning point? So going from all this into, you know, where you are now. So there must have been a moment where you were like, oh, wow.
The turning point, and it was very slow in happening. I worked in the home care sector in Ireland for about 10 years.
That's home help.
Home help, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. So I was enabling older people to remain living at home, you know, with appropriate support. So I would kind of match them up with carers, and I would be liaising and making sure the service was appropriate and everyone was happy, and, you know, engaging with public health nurses and GPs and what have you. And I was just so disheartened by the whole system.
Okay.
And I think probably the best 5 minutes of my life, you know, in hindsight, was I was in my car, you know, at work driving, and I heard an interview, and I can't even remember what station it was on, but they were talking about the concept of home sharing. And it was literally like a light bulb. I know people use that cliche. It was like a light bulb, you know, switched on in my head. It was a light bulb moment for me, because I could, you know, when I was listening to, you know, the explanation about home sharing, it completely made sense to me. And I immediately could see this actually is an answer.
Okay. So just to recap, so you were nursing.
Yes.
You left nursing and you went...
I went to British Airways.
British Airways, Mile High, and you were doing that for 6 years. fell in love after having loads of fun. Six years of a party. You left there, you got married, that went belly up, and you weren't working, and then you went into the home care, home help sector.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so, and then you came along this light bulb moment in the car, home share. What happened next?
So I started doing loads of research. And I, you know, found out that home sharing, actually the model originated in America over 40 years ago. So basically I hot-footed it on a plane over to London to meet with existing home share programs over there. And I met with Elizabeth Mills, OBE. She's just retiring now. She was heavily involved with Homeshare International. So basically I knew immediately what the benefits of home sharing were, but I wanted to know about the risks. So I went over, you know, did my homework, and then I came back home and I proceeded just to slowly, you know, I was still working full time at the time. So I started just slowly, you know, working towards the home share, setting up the home share.
So what is thehomeshare.ie?
So the is an acronym for together helping each other.
Okay.
So to me, that sums it up. Home sharing is two people together helping each other. So basically what home sharing is we match two unrelated people to live together for a mutual benefit. So typically you have an older person who is usually living on their own. You know, they might be widowed. They may have no partner, no children, whatever. But somebody who has a home, and they could be lonely most of the time. You know, a lot of older people, a lot of young people, a lot of people in general, a lot of people are lonely, especially older people. So they offer a spare room in their home for an accommodation seeker. So we meet both parties, and then we match them together based on personality, interests, all that kind of stuff. So instead of the accommodation seeker paying rent, they offer 10 hours a week of company and support to the older person. So they could maybe make dinner, you know, for the older person, or the two of them make dinner together and sit down and, you know, have dinner together a few nights a week. They could help with household chores, shopping, sitting down like on OAPBB last night, you know, sitting down, shouting at the telly like they're on Gogglebox. Basically, the person who moves in literally becomes part of the family.
Okay.
And then they're there overnight then in case of emergencies. So if you know, if John or Mary had a fall or if they had a stroke, they're not going to be lying on the floor all night long. You know, there is someone in the house, a responsible adult in the house, who will pick up the phone to emergency services and the family and then ourselves.
So it has so many benefits.
The benefits are so, so far reaching. I'm still finding out about benefits.
Okay.
Even this morning, I was a couple of minutes late coming up to you because I had an application, you know. So we've had 1,400 people apply to us to be sharers in the last 18 months or so. And just last night, we had an application from a lady who is retired, and she's in her 60s. And she said, you know, I'm looking to home share because I'm in an abusive marriage and I can't afford to get out. I can't afford to rent. So I was talking to her this morning.
Okay.
So
we'll come to some stories in a moment. Mm. So you said to me when you came in first that you're at a really good place. You're really content. You're really, really happy. Tell me more about that and your relationship with the home share.
So it's funny, actually, going back to my nursing days. I remember my first ever lecture in nursing. We were all horrified at this, but the lecturer said, now, you're all here to be nurses, but you're kind of here because you all want to be cared for. And what's the quickest and easiest way for someone to look after you? It's for you to look after somebody first, and then it kind of, you know, falls back on you. And I was horrified at that. But you know what? Doing what I'm doing now and seeing the results, that's what drives me.
So what kind of results do you see?
I see people, I mean, I've started using a hashtag, live your best life or live a better life. I see people living the best life that they can.
Okay.
And it's staggering. It's humbling to see the difference that it makes to so many people. It's amazing.
So you must feel amazing after your past experiences and always feeling unsure, uncertain, insecure. You know, always feeling that you're in this kind of danger zone and you're unsure what's coming next.
Mm.
Because let's face it, that has been your past.
Mm.
And now all of a sudden then you're predicting people. It's like it's so inspiring.
I think I always say to my children, I've got three teenagers. My eldest is in sixth year doing the Leaving Cert this year. And I say to them, okay, school matters, you know. I think school is just getting people used to getting up every morning and doing something for the day. But I say to them, find your passion, whether it's, you know, emptying the bins, you know, packing bags in a supermarket,
getting stuff done,
or whatever job, because obviously we all have to work, we all have to earn a living. But I say to them, find your passion and you will never go wrong. And you'll
actually
never.
What is your passion, Lucy?
I think my passion is older people, I think, primarily. I absolutely just adore them. I don't know.
What does it do for you?
It makes me feel that I have a purpose, that I'm making a difference in people's lives. It makes me feel good about myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's something that in the past you wouldn't have felt?
No, because I suppose I was always questioning myself. Maybe because I was in a marriage with a narcissist, I ended up, didn't even get into this, but I ended up in a 5-year relationship with another narcissist. So that ended 2 years ago, again, after another protection order. So I have been there, done that, and I've learnt my lesson now.
Do you think now, doing what you're doing, you have this kind of self-belief now and you're a lot stronger than what you would have been in the past?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you feel powerful?
I do, yeah, I do. Yeah. And I don't know if that's... I think it's okay to say
I am powerful, because what you're doing is, like, you know, you're changing people's lives, you're making people happier, you're giving people a roof over their head. There's so many things that you are doing. So you're a powerhouse.
Oh,
what are you?
Oh no, I can't say that.
Okay.
I feel really lucky. I do think age maybe comes into it as well. I'm at the stage, I'm 44. I couldn't give a damn what anyone thinks about me.
Good.
You know, I mean, I've been in Leinster House. I've met ministers. I've met, you know, very high up people in their own profession.
You've met Shane Burke in Near FM.
Life doesn't get better, you know?
Okay, so take us to a couple of examples. Tell us about your kind of average working day.
My average working day is... firstly, can I actually say that, you know, I've been doing this now for about 2.5 years, and I honestly, hand on my heart, say I haven't worked in the last 2.5 years.
Brilliant.
And I think that's the key to finding something that you're passionate about. You'll
of
never
course.
Work again. You will never
of course.
Work again. But my average working day, what was I doing yesterday? Yesterday was a great day. I'm matching people up, you know, making phone calls with applicants, checking in with current matches.
What are you seeing a lot of? The same kind of people? Same age bracket? Same race? Same gender?
Do you know, the average, I know it's a big gap, but the average age of sharers is between 25 and 45.
Okay. What's the biggest problem that they have?
The cost of renting, finding somewhere. Also, you know, wanting to live in a quiet house, you know, not renting with five other people. And I've been there. When I was nursing, I shared a house in London with five couples and me. That was a lot of fun.
Always going. It's always like a train station.
It is. And it's like you're queuing up to use the cooker, and people might be leaving their dirty plates for weeks. And, you know, it's just a mess.
Okay.
You know?
Tell us about your most recent, I suppose, most favourite match of home share. Because we all have favourites, okay?
My most favourite. Look, I suppose, you know, one that I suppose I have to mention OAP B&B, and I'm sorry, there was a phone going, and that was actually David, who was ringing me from OAP B&B last night.
And I guarantee you, he's saying, I can hear you on the radio, you're doing great.
Hi David, hi Colette, love you. I hope they haven't got sore heads today, because I dropped over a few bottles of Prosecco to them last night to help with the party, because they're having a big party watching it.
So OAP B&B was...
OAP B&B was...
On last night.
It was on last night, yeah. So there's five. So look, we're really, really proud that... OAP B&B is based on the home share model. So very, you know, delighted that I'm the home share consultant on the series as well. So listen, they're amazing. You know, David and Colette are amazing. They wouldn't be your typical match, because Colette is 70 going on 20.
Okay.
You know, full of energy. She's got more energy than I do. So, you know, our typical match would be the older person would be, you know, kind of between, the average age is probably about 86.
Okay.
You know, of our householder. One amazing one, very new match is actually our oldest householder, who is 100 years of age. So she's living with a lady who's 53. Our oldest sharer is 66. She's living with the lady who, so she moved in with this lady and her husband. Unfortunately, her husband passed away, but it's been incredible. This lady now, because she still has a sharer living with her since her husband passed away, she's not lonely. Of course, she misses her husband
every day.
So it's
called a sharer, not a tenant, a lodger,
no.
A nuisance. It's called a sharer.
A sharer.
That's a really good title.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I suppose in the midst of it all, you are connecting people and you are giving people a light of a whole new life.
Mm.
And that's the way it is. So not only are you fulfilling your passion, but you're following your dream. You're empowering others, you're supporting others, and you're connecting people to be happier. So it's a win-win.
I'm entirely so lucky. Just listening back to what you said there.
But you deserve
it. Yeah, no.
So anyone wants to get in touch with you, for example, if somebody's looking to share, or if there's somebody listening that may be lonely and is looking to consider it, how can they get in touch with you?
So I suppose the website. You know, we have a website, www.thehomeshare.ie. There's our email, info@thehomeshare.ie. We're on Facebook. Our phone number is 086-412-6381.
And I suppose the most important thing is just reach out, ask the questions. It may not be the right time today, but it could be down the road. Or if you're listening and you're considering it, bear it in mind. So Lucy, look, thank you so much. You're a rock of knowledge, but I didn't think I was going to get half as good as an interview, because you've really been like really honest.
Raw. I promise myself I will be. Yeah.
But you know what? It's most important, because there are people that can listen and that can relate to you. And let's face it, you know, every storm passes and the darkest days bring the brightest, you know, and that's the
Absolutely.
Most important thing. So look, well done from us all here in Near FM, and we wish you all the very, very best.